Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing podcast. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the Editor-in-Chief here at Directions. I'm your host for this series of podcasts designed for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. Today's podcast is a little bit different than our normal ones. It's a recording of our annual Microsoft Roadmap Update panel with a group of the Directions analysts. In the Roadmap Update, we talk about some of the top hot buttons from the current year and share projections about some of the areas that we think will matter most to customers in the coming year. We thought this year's webinar, in which we discuss everything from Microsoft's growing Copilot AI Assistant family to Fabric Data Analytics and lots more, was so good that we wanted to share it in podcast form. Enjoy.
The topic for today is Microsoft Roadmap Update, being presented by a panel of Directions Microsoft analysts, Directions on Microsoft's analysts, and it's being led by the one and only Mary Jo Foley. So Mary Jo, whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you so much, Lauren. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining our webinar today. So as Lauren said, this is our annual Microsoft Roadmap Update, where we're going to talk about what mattered in 2023 and what comes next. Our panel is going to provide their takes on the top hot buttons for Microsoft across the enterprise product and licensing spectrum. They'll talk about issues they've been following in 2023 and things they're expecting for 2024. So if you've attended any of the Directions webinars in the past, you might be used to a very polished, very well-orchestrated experience. Today's experience is going to be a little bit different. This is going to be a rapid fire panel that reflects some of the new branding, the new product, and the new licensing changes announced as late as yesterday at Ignite. So one of my jobs here on this panel is going to be keeping the analysts on schedule. As I did last year when I did this panel, I have brought along my trusty gong, which has been in hibernation for the past year, but for today it's coming out again to keep the analysts going. Analysts, please keep it short and sweet, or you will hear this. After our panel of analysts presents, we're going to do a lightning round on everyone's, and especially Microsoft's, favorite topic of 2023, Copilots. We have more unknowns than knowns here, but there's no shortage of opinions among our analysts and among our readers and members. After that, I'm going to ask the panelists a few more questions of my own, and I'm going to include a few that we've gotten from our members and readers over the past year. Then it's going to be your turn for live questions, and we'll provide again the instructions on how to do this when it's time. But first, I want to talk a little bit about Directions. For those not familiar with Directions on Microsoft, we are an independent IT planning, information, and advisory service that focuses exclusively on Microsoft Enterprise technologies, and we've been in business since 1992. By independent, we mean we do not work for Microsoft, and we do not speak for Microsoft, and Microsoft is very happy about that, I may add. Our only mission is to track Microsoft changes and provide impartial facts and informed insights that our customers need to evaluate, plan for, and purchase when they're evaluating and looking at Microsoft products and services. We have many Directions products and services, including detailed reports, evaluation kits, on-premises and cloud-based roadmaps, and our world-famous licensing bootcamp and negotiation service. Okay, without further ado, I want to briefly introduce our esteemed analyst panel who will be providing today's hot takes. We have on the panel Barry Briggs, who covers here enterprise architecture and corporate governance, Jim Gaynor, who does Teams, Windows Server, and architecture, Wes Miller, who does identity management and systems management, Rob Sanfilippo, who covers Azure and DevTools, Andrew Snodgrass, who covers data management, BI, CRM, and ERP, all the letters, Josh Troopin, who covers business apps, Office, and Power Platform, and myself. I am the editor-in-chief here at Directions, but today I also will be doing the Windows client piece of the presentation, as Michael Cherry, our regular Windows analyst, could not be part of our panel today. Okay, let's start right in. We're going to start with Directions analyst Barry Briggs, who leads much of our CXO and executive focus coverage and content. So Barry, I'm curious, what do you think mattered the most in the Microsoft Enterprise world in 2023, and what's going to be top of mind for customers in 2024?
Thanks, Mary Jo. First point, compliance. Most people think it's a pretty mundane topic, but it's critical. The penalties can be very severe. So compliance is a sweeping topic, and Microsoft is actually pretty far ahead of the other cloud vendors in the space. They have services covering data loss protection, privacy, insider risk, sensitivity labeling for content, e-discovery. But here's the deal. Increasingly, capabilities that enterprises need simply require E5. For example, most companies of any size will have many e-discovery cases going on. And while there are basic features for e-discovery, I'm just using that as an example, things like case management, data custodians, advanced search, all those require E5. And there are lots of features like communication compliance, insider risk management that just don't exist in E3. So, and there's also, dare I say it, kind of AI features going into the various services that detect harmful or offensive speech, to recognize and label different types of content and so on. And guess where they all are? And that's why the picture you see up here, just a little on the top heavy side. So E5. Second, real quickly, there's lots of branding going on, all these new umbrella brands like Purview, Defender, Entra, Azure AI Services, and for that matter, Copilot. Leaving aside of Copilot, and we'll get to it, trust me. There's a lot of marketing activity going on here, not a whole lot of change per se. All the services under Purview and Defender and Intra and Azure AI Services are licensed the same as they were before the rebrand, and they're still being developed on more or less the same trajectory as they were on. Essentially, I suspect Microsoft thought it, air quotes, simplifying the branding. Not really sure they succeeded. Lastly, and most strategically, is Microsoft spreading itself too thin? Certainly, we all know they're peanut buttering AI over every product group, over every services, and you can kind of get why. Although, honestly, whether they're doing it more for customers or for shareholders may be open to question. But as we all know, there's a lot more to enterprise software than AI. We're not seeing a whole lot of announcements, a few, but not a lot of announcements around Azure IoT, none around Azure Space. And while my colleague Andy, who's coming up in a few slides, may disagree, many of my data friends say that Snowflake is actually a lot easier to deploy and use than the blizzard of Azure data services. So I think that question about spreading itself too thin is a valid question. And as you consider your Microsoft purchases, just remember, not everything's about the bright, shiny object. You have work to do. So that's it. Back to you, Mary Jo.
All right. That's a great way to end that one. Thank you so much, Barry. Next up, we have Jim Gaynor, who has decided he is only going to present two bullets today, not three like everyone else. Because, Jim, actually.
Because, yeah, I'm perverse.
Because these topics are very meaty and very complex. So take it away, Jim.
All right. Well, I've got my timer going here, so I know when I get to have to be shut off. So first thing I want to mention is, Teams kind of shifting towards a la carte. Of course, you guys have, if you've been on our webinars before, you've heard me talk about Teams reports. And Teams was a huge focus at launch for Microsoft. They were pushing it really hard to deal with the threat of Slack. And then once the pandemic hit, Microsoft just rode that work from home, remote work wave for meetings and phone systems. And Microsoft wanted adoption. So everything was built in. And Teams was a no-cost addition to almost every suite. It made licensing simple, it reduced the friction for your adoption of it, it allowed Microsoft to push Teams into almost every organization without a lot of transition. But now, you know, Teams adoption has slowed, it's everywhere. Copilot's the golden child, and Teams has to contribute more to the bottom line. So new capabilities are showing up more often in add-ons like Teams Premium, or they're requiring higher level suites like Microsoft 365 instead of Office 365. The licensing is also shifting. You've got increased costs for Rooms device licensing, more enforcement for devices like common area phones, and even integration with things like Power Platform capabilities or Viva feels more like an introductory offer that's designed to get you start using it and want more and get a bigger license because, well, you're already using Teams. It's all there, right? And of course, there's all the Copilot stuff, but like Mary Jo said, we'll have that for the final round. So for Teams, this means that your future marquee functionality is likely to come at an additional cost, either add-ons or higher suite requirements. And licensing Teams, which you all relied on being nice and simple compared to other Microsoft products, is going to start to get more complex as you begin to license specific capabilities for specific users, a la carte, rather than the all-inclusive buffet that we were used to in the early years of Teams. As for Windows Server, it's getting harder to avoid hybrid and Azure. I mean, this is pretty simple. I've been harping on this one for years now. Microsoft continues to push Azure Arc for managing Windows Server on-prem right now. You had announcements this week for System Center. Literally just this week, we had System Center Update Rollup 2 was announced, which includes, hey, System Center Virtual Machine Manager enabled by Azure Arc, so you can do all the Azure Arc stuff for it. System Center Operations Manager Managed Instance, which gives you System Center Operations Manager in Azure. So all of that stuff is in Azure. Recent updates to Windows Server 2022 itself have included an Azure Arc registration wizard, and it's likely that Windows Server 2025, which isn't formally announced but it's expected late next year, big Ignite session is tomorrow, will include Azure Arc signups at the very least. Not to mention, just to kind of wrap things up here, the recent changes with extended security updates pretty much make Azure Arc a requirement to use them, unless you can really make some kind of justification otherwise. You get better terms, easier installation and management than you do under the old annual purchase model, which really you can't even find on the price list any longer. So all of this stuff comes together, a combination of product changes and licensing pressure that are making it harder for customers that want to run traditional server-based workloads on premises or in data centers that aren't Azure, which again is what Microsoft wants. They don't want you attached to an Azure subscription of some sort, rather than writing out a perpetual license outside of their cloud. I think I went over a little bit, Mary Jo, but back to you.
No, nicely done. Thank you so much, Jim. now we're going to go to Wes Miller, who has a daunting task at Directions of keeping up with security and identity related topics as they're ever changing. Wes?
I keep track of all the old stuff. Thank you, Mary Jo. So the first thing on that front is good security analytics. Just this week, Microsoft announced that Microsoft 365 Defender will become Microsoft Defender XDR. And if you pull back the covers off of this, what you'll clearly see is that it's still the same stack of technologies. They're just working harder to unify them. So Sentinel still exists. All of the individual services that comprise Defender still exist. But the point is, Microsoft is getting to the point where you can get one set of eyes on an incident and see what's happening, not necessarily in real time, but in pretty close to real time, as long as, per Barry's point in the first slide, you're paying for that full E5 stack, because basically everything I'm talking about on this slide is E5 or above. It's pretty much a requirement in the security identity or systems management space now. So that's security. On the second one, this actually interrelates but doesn't interrelate with what Jim was talking about, because it's a completely different world, which is to say, put the rest of Windows Server that Jim talked about aside and focus just on the identity infrastructure. And I bring that up specifically because the certificate services and federation services, the ADFS and ADCS infrastructures used by Active Directory, have really grown to become hinge points that attackers are focusing in on. And Microsoft, to their credit, has made things like Defender for Identity able to focus in on those two particular technologies. But if you're not watching them, you should be, because that's where the attackers are going. They're not necessarily even looking at domain controllers first. They're trying to go sideways into your org through a bunch of servers that you probably forgot are even there. So I bring this up because I see over the next 2 years, a lot of organizations really needing to focus in on how do they integrate better with AAD, with Entra ID, there we go, with Entra ID, what was AAD, and make their AD infrastructure more harmonized with that, and begin retiring certain roles or specifically certain servers that might be putting their organization at risk because they haven't been maintained or just aren't managed as well as or as actively as they should be. And lastly, this rings just right along with Jim's point on Teams, the licensing chaos that exists now for Entra ID. Intune and Defender for Endpoint. I've written about each one of these separately, but if you haven't been keeping up, there's a new tier of each one of these now. So what you could think of as Entra IDP 3, the identity governance piece, is now a premium add-on for P2. Intune has two new tiers above what was Intune before. And then Defender for Endpoint, if you want vulnerability management, I wrote a report about this just this last month that focuses in on the fact that you may need to pay additional, even though you have E5, because you want better insight into the kinds of vulnerabilities that might exist on your Windows endpoints in particular. So there's a lot of chaos just looking at what was in the Microsoft 365 stack, you know, for many years, let alone the Copilot things that we'll talk about at the end of today. So just trying to keep track of what's going on in the Microsoft 365 stack and increasingly above it with batteries that aren't included is pretty much a full-time job. Back to you, Mary Jo.
All right. Thank you so much, Wes. Now time for a little dev goodness from our analyst, Rob Sanfilippo. Rob, take it away.
Thanks, Mary Jo. So I've, for several years, been focusing around Azure cost optimization as one of the major things to pay attention on with Azure. And that's going to remain important for deployments, I believe, over the next year. Azure, it continues to receive frequent updates to its services and its features, but several of these reduce costs without degrading deployment performance or other requirements. And new Azure hardware has been announced this week, and that could improve the price performance ratio of deployments. So customers should always watch for promotions and licensing changes that optimize costs, and we'll continue to have a series of reports that highlight those as they come. And we also know that a cost management copilot is coming. This is going to help customers use natural language to query cost information about Azure deployments. So it's a more direct way of optimizing your deployments through natural language without having to deal with the specifics of all the various tools. And then the next thing is GitHub. GitHub continues to gain traction. It's the central hub now of Microsoft's development platform. Last week I was down in San Francisco at GitHub's annual Universe conference, and they announced several more enhancements to GitHub. Many were focused on the AI capabilities of GitHub Copilot, such as a new enterprise tier for that tool, and that supports fine-tuning of Copilot to gain knowledge of organizational repositories. And there's also a new Copilot partner program coming, and that's going to build an ecosystem around GitHub Copilot plugins. And look out for something called GitHub Copilot Workspaces. It's a fascinating new thing. I'm not going to get into it here right now. But other GitHub enhancements include new features in GitHub Advanced Security that will help reduce vulnerabilities and scrub secrets lingering in code. There's support for new, support for Apple hardware now, which can speed hosted automation workflows. And then there's a lot of usability improvements across GitHub, such as merge queues and repo tags. Finally, I wanted to mention Visual Studio and conjure up some controversy here, but as we all know, Visual Studio, it's Microsoft's marquee integrated development environment. It's always been the full-featured center for Microsoft developer tools innovation. But Visual Studio Code has become immensely popular. VS Code, it's a totally different product despite the shared name. It's lightweight, extensible, and most notably, it's free. There's been no Microsoft discussion of a shift in investment from Visual Studio to VS Code, but there's some early indicators that VS Code may be the new star IDE. So for example, new GitHub services support VS Code first, and a plan for the next major VS version hasn't been announced yet, although it would normally be expected within the next year, but probably by the end of 2024, but we haven't heard anything about it. But so VS customers, Visual Studio customers shouldn't start to worry yet, but Visual Studio longevity is something to keep a watch over for the next year. Back to you, Mary Jo.
Nice cliffhanger. I like it. That was a good one. All right. Next up, we've got Andrew Snodgrass, our analyst who lately has been herding cats. I mean, co-pilots around here. You'll hear more about that later, I assume. But he covers a lot more than that. So, Andy, what's interesting in the data space now and into the next year?
Well, I think probably the big one that we've all been waiting for this year was Fabric, and it's GA as of yesterday. Well, let's say mostly GA. Okay, there's still a list of things that are in preview, and those will arrive over the next year or so. But you know, the major portions are there, and it is a pretty cool environment. Now, if you don't know Fabric, this is an end-to-end analytics platform. I've got a ILO that's there on the screen, and it uses a bunch of existing services like Synapse and Data Factory and Power BI and Data Lake. The big so what of Fabric is that for customers who want to use all these services, Fabric takes away the complexity of deployment and simplifies the whole data sharing and security and purchasing kind of things on it. You know, all the really stuff that's hard to do when you're trying to deploy the underlying services on your own and connect them together. And it's really become a nice platform to work in. Now, in case our favorite codependent platform, Dynamics 365, is feeling left out, I want to mention that they're also doing really well, and there's some noticeable advancements going on there. The CRM and ERP platforms, they're playing nicely together, which is helpful for people using both environments. They're also both receiving a regular batch of new features, and these are focused primarily on advanced capabilities, which I always like to take a look at because that's usually a signal that a service is maturing enough. They're not as much on the low-level kind of capabilities, but rather on niche or advanced features. And, you know, Dynamics was already pushing heavily into the AI-infused world long before Copilot became a craze this past year. And finally, near and dear to my heart are the database services, which I have to say across the board are still receiving lots of love with lots of updates and features and integrations. You know, personally, I'm really impressed that Microsoft was willing to take on board so many of the open source products out there, even when they compete directly with SQL Server. And who knows, Barry, we might have a Snowflake service in the future. And there are things out there that happened recently, like there's updates to Cosmos DB and Cassandra and Postgres and MySQL. And amazingly, HD Insight, the original Hadoop environment they had, is even getting a new lease on life. But with all this open source news, I'm not worried about SQL Server. It's still strong and it's still relevant. So there we go.
All right. All right. You heard it here first. Snowflake on Azure. Just kidding.
No.
All right. Now we're going to turn to Josh Truppen. He is going to regale us with Power Platform, plus a bit more about what's happening in the Microsoft 365 and Office 365 space. And he has a lot of bullets here. Josh, you get 3 minutes. Go ahead.
I took 5 bullets because Jim only took 2. So Ignite managed to blow up a lot of stuff, and we're lucky this webinar wasn't about 2 days ago. First thing companies are going to be encountering in the months to come is a licensing scheme that has been rolled out for Power Automate. Simply put, they're lowering the price point of per flow licensing, including robotic processing automation features. So if you're running flows as RPA bots, this will be a price cut. If you're not using RPA, it's a price increase. Second, we've been working with several customers this year who want to extend their Power Apps footprint and they can't afford it. Because unlike Power Automate, Power Apps still does not offer true per app licensing. You can't just pay a fixed monthly price for an app and give it to everyone in your tenancy without going to per user licensing. Now, I've spoken to Microsoft several times. They keep hinting there's some upcoming announcements, but still nothing. Third thing, Outlook. If you've used Outlook, you've probably seen the client nag you to try the new Outlook. Don't do it. Microsoft has been working on this for several years. They're still a year out from GA. Right now, it's missing some key features like COM add-in support, offline access, PST support, support for accounts that are not on Gmail or Outlook.com. So it feels like Outlook is kind of being re-engineered along the lines of the OneNote fiasco a couple of years back. Upside is that COM add-ins are notoriously crashy. Forcing the switch to web add-ins could make Outlook more stable, but do not click the Try the New Outlook button yet. let someone else donate their time to test software from Microsoft. Now, the last two items here are kind of breaking news from Ignite. Fourth point is that Power Virtual Agent has been rebranded as Microsoft Copilot Studio. So if you go there, it already has changed the website and everything. Chatbots have been rebranded Copilots, and Copilot Studio is going to be a feature of Copilot for Microsoft 365 next year. I have not found any other path to obtaining it. So that means that in 2024, if you want to use chatbot/copilot, you're going to need an E3 or an E5 license. We're not sure our customers doing things like embedding chatbots or copilots in Power Pages are going to be able to proceed with this right now, but it's already looking really sloppy. And then the fifth point is that Microsoft Syntex or SharePoint Syntex is dead, and long live SharePoint Premium. Syntex began life as an AI-based application service. It's been adding these loosely coupled services to its brand, and now the features already in there, like content assembly, taxonomy tagging, are going to join new features like translation for stream video transcripts under a new product name, SharePoint Premium, in 2024. Right now, the existing features are pay-as-you-go, capacity-based. Pricing for SharePoint Premium has not been made public yet. The new features are going to include Microsoft 365 Archive and Backup. Both of them are in preview. Archive is cold storage that can be reactivated after 7 days. It's about a third the price of the backup warm storage. And you start to pay as you go for Archive right now in preview when your Archive storage is bigger than your tenancy storage quota. SharePoint Premium will also include a new e-signature feature, which is probably not going to compete. They have Adobe and DocuSign as partners, so I'm not sure where they're going with that in the market. And I think I'm right at the end of my 3 minutes or 4 minutes.
You went a little over, but you know what? You had a lot of content, so we'll cut you a little slack. I didn't ring the gong.
This time.
All right, now it's my turn. I am putting on my virtual Windows Watcher hat right now. I'm going to talk a little bit about Windows Client, and I'm going to use some of the notes Michael Cherry shared with me and add my own 2 cents as well. So first, the first thing that we're going to talk about, is there a driving force to upgrade to Windows 11? And the answer is yes. The driving force is the end of support for all editions of Windows 10. It's coming up in 2 years, a little less than 2 years, on October 14, 2025. None of us think Microsoft is going to extend that date. Michael told me he believes no enterprise should be planning for or hoping that Microsoft is going to offer extended security updates for Windows 10. He said, even if they do, if a fix is made available for any vulnerability, it's solely up to Microsoft if they deliver it through the ESU. Plus, ESUs are very expensive. I just want to throw a little caveat in there. I'm not as convinced as he is they won't do ESUs for Windows 10. And there's two reasons. The uptake of Windows 11 has been relatively slow. Most enterprises are still running 10, not 11. And it is in your best, it's in your best financial interest to avoid ESUs if you can. But for Microsoft, ESUs are a gold mine, right? Like, why wouldn't they do an ESU? It's going to bring in more money for them. So also, just announced a few minutes ago at Ignite, Copilot is coming to Windows 10. So some people are already saying, oh, that's proof. Microsoft's going to extend the life of Windows 10. The end of service date isn't going to be 2025. I say no, that's not what is happening. Microsoft is just trying to get Copilot and Bing in front of more people. And since there's more people on 10, it makes sense to put Copilot on 10. So that's going to be coming soon, I believe, is what they're saying. So stay tuned if you care about Copilot on Windows 10. One more thing on this point, Michael mentioned to me, organizations need to make sure that if they're running an out of support OS, even if they're using an ESU, that it does not void or negatively impact their cybersecurity insurance coverage. I wouldn't have thought of that. The bottom line is ESUs have their own risks, and he says they will out, outweigh the false sense of security that they provide. Okay, second point. So we're trying to convince you, get off Windows 10. Are there devices that can run all Windows 11, 22H2, or 23H2 features? Or are these devices scarce? These devices are not scarce, but most organizations have a schedule for their PC hardware in terms of support that's longer than the life cycle of the OS. So this is pretty much true of all hardware, all operating systems, regardless of who makes or sells them. Michael's advice is organizations should seriously be looking at how their hardware lifecycle aligns with the OS lifecycle. Organizations must constantly monitor feature changes in the OS with the hardware requirements and decide which type of devices make sense for different categories of users. So this is a great example. Right now, Microsoft's talking about how they believe in the future, all devices are going to have a neural processing unit, an NPU. But does every organization and every user in that organization need that processor? You know, Microsoft showed off how it can do things like noise cancellation or make remote meetings better. But does everyone need that in your organization? Maybe not. So it's a good time to start thinking about which devices, which roles need which hardware. All right. This is one Michael didn't want me to talk about, but so don't tell him I'm doing this, but I'm going to talk about Windows 12. Everyone asked about it, so let's talk about it. It took Microsoft 6 years to go from Windows 10 to 11. Windows 11 launched 2 years ago. So you're like, okay, that makes sense. So they get, you know, 4 more years. But the rumors say Microsoft did move back last year to a 3-year cadence of when they do new Windows releases, which would mean something like Windows 12 would be coming in 2024. And there have been lots of leaks, including a mention, much to Microsoft's chagrin, from the Intel CFO, who said there will be a new version of Windows coming next year, meaning 2024. And if you look at the recent Windows test builds, there's been lots of hints and little bits of code that show something is in the works. So I will say, if you're somebody who loves rumors like I do about Windows, go to Windows Central. They have been all over this. WindowsCentral.com. They say there's a 2024 release in the pipeline. It's codenamed Hudson Valley. It'll include, guess what? New AI features, of course. But they also think it's going to include some of the concepts that Microsoft was trying to deliver with Windows 10X, which got canceled in 2021. So that's all about making the OS more modular and better able to run all kinds of form factors. We keep hearing that Microsoft's Chrome Compete team has ambitions about getting Windows to run better on less powerful devices, especially for the education market. So let's see. In the end, why am I bringing up these rumors? I do think there's going to be a Windows release in 2024. I don't think it's going to be Windows 12, but I do think there'll be something there. And if you're an organization trying to figure out, should I go to 11? I'm on 10. What should I do? I'm going to tell you, just ignore whatever happens in 2024. Unless you're in education, it might affect you, but otherwise, just forget about it. All right. So now we go to the Copilot lightning round. Satya said yesterday at Ignite, Satya, like my good buddy, Satya Nadella, the CEO, Copilot will be the new UI for both the world's knowledge and your organization's knowledge. But most importantly, it will be your agent that helps you act on that knowledge. Okay, so it's like, it's everything to everyone. It's the ultimate. We've gotten a lot of questions here at Directions about Copilots lately. There's so many Microsoft Copilots, more coming daily pretty much. If a product or service doesn't yet have a Copilot, it will. But I want our analysts to examine some questions like, are Copilots right now must-haves on any platform? I would say yes on GitHub Copilot, but let's see what analysts say about the others. And how should companies choose who gets what? I mean, should everybody get Copilots or not? If you can even get them. I mean, in some cases, they're not available to everyone. Finally, are customers ready? Are their data estates ready? Are there rules in place to keep them from having a very major leak? Let's talk about this. I'm going to start with Rob Sanfilippo, because in our weekly meetings here at Directions, he is always the most bullish about Copilots and where Microsoft's going with Copilot. So Rob, what do you think about all this?
I'm bullish on it, actually.
I know.
okay, I yeah, we I could talk forever. We could all talk forever on this, but I isolated it to two big things I wanted to point out. Why I'm bullish on Copilots. First is that Copilots are going to tap into application and service functionality that's been dormant, possibly for years or even decades, by leveraging natural language that humans all can use very easily. So for example, if you look at Copilot for Microsoft 365, that could make Office application tasks significantly easier by reducing the need for users to be trained in the mechanics and UIs of the complex product features. So features that have been long present in those apps, and I'm talking back even into the 90s, and then new features that arrive hereafter could be more accessible to users just because they're driven by natural language interaction. So think just a handful of features. Excel, you got pivot tables, cell threshold highlighting, spark lines in PowerPoint, all that great slide building and transition features to make a presentation really pop. In Word, you have things like bookmarks that have been around forever that a lot of people have never touched. So I keep thinking of all these features that are there that if you spend the time to learn, if you have that time and you really want to put in the effort, you could do some great things with these apps. But people, either they never have learned about these features, they don't have the time, or they just don't want to bother with it. But with Copilot, you'll be able to just start using all these features that have been around and that are coming just by asking for them in natural language. So that's the first thing, dormant functionality that's going to just all of a sudden become available easily. Second thing is plugins. So all Copilots use the same architecture, and that includes ChatGPT, includes Bing Chat, everything called Copilot. And that same architecture allows customers to extend Copilot knowledge and generative capabilities for their own needs. So for example, you could take any Copilot and build a plugin that could look up an internal product sales database or access information in an employee handbook or create a tracking item in Jira. You could even have it do actions like drive manufacturing equipment. And this week, Copilot Studio was announced. It's going to make building plugins even easier, more at the low-code, no-code level for users. So plugins, that's where organizations are really going to get a lot of power out of Copilots, and I think that's something everyone needs to pay attention to. Copilots.
Okay. Those are my super. Okay. I agree that a lot of this stuff looks really cool, like the demos look cool, the sizzle reels, we keep seeing it, all the events look cool. But Jim and I were talking back and forth about, okay, this looks great. A lot of times these are canned demos, they're not live demos. In fact, you almost never see a live demo of any of these Copilots other than GitHub Copilot. So Jim, how do you suggest customers sort through the hype here on this?
Yeah, so of course, one thing that's interesting with a lot of these LLMs is that you don't have what we look at as reproducible results. If you give it the exact same, if the same person gives it the same prompt, they're not going to get the same results every single time. So that kind of was one of the reasons why the demos tend to be canned. And one of the things that we still need to adjust to if we're looking at these copilots at generative AI, it's not that straight logic, which is part of the reason why I think you said that GitHub Copilot is more interesting because that's a structured language, not human language. But I think there's still a lot of things that we still need to sort through before we can really go, you know, the demo, hey, that's cool. But there's a lot of underlying stuff that I think isn't being talked about as much that is going to slow down companies when they really realize it. One of the big things, and you've heard me rant about this one, is IP issues, copyright, ownership. There have been multiple court cases that say that generative AI created content is not subject to copyright. And this includes text. So you want to make your corporation's next marketing slogan via AI, guess what? You don't own it, period. Copyright is currently the purvey of human created content. So that's something that I think is going to be concerning to a lot of companies. But again, all this stuff is still demos. It's showing very specific use cases. And I think that they're struggling really hard. I mean, all the stuff that they released at Ignite talks about 75% more effective, and 65% of our users thought they were more useful, and they saved on average this much time. But at least from my own experience in the corporate world, they want to know hard dollars. They want to know how much actual money this is going to save me. Oh, well, this made someone 5% more effective. That's nice. It is a co-pilot. It's an assistant. And so it doesn't have that kind of very hard, very tangible return on investment that can be easily measured yet. And that's going to slow adoption once customers get past the shininess of it, if that makes sense.
It does. Yep. I know Josh had some concerns around innovation and co-pilots, which sounds kind of backwards, but explain it, Josh.
Sure. Well, yeah, from the higher level, I think that for power platform services, low-code development, co-pilot is going to make developers / makers more efficient. It's basically looking up stuff, except it does it for you, basically. And as Jim mentioned, one problem is that AI-created works are not copyrightable. So you generate content for Power Pages, actual text. You need to talk to your legal department before actually using any of this stuff. But one factor that I've heard from a couple of Microsoft contacts, both internal and external, is that Microsoft has such an overriding focus on Copilot right now, it could actually be slowing general innovation. So groups like Microsoft Research are all hands on deck. All they're tasked with right now is working ChatGPT LLMs into existing products. So they're not able to think as much. We're losing some of what might be termed as, you know, the pure science that Microsoft Research has done in the past, and that has ended up driving technical evolution over the decades. So concentrating on Copilot is great for Copilot, but possibly not for the features that Copilot helps you use better.
Okay, interesting. Andy, how do you think customers should choose who gets which co-pilots if they have access to co-pilots?
Oh, give everybody one. Absolutely.
All right.
Now, you know, it's interesting on that. It comes back to the old adage of just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? I mean, we can give everybody an i7 32 gig laptop, but we shouldn't, because not everybody needs one, right? And this comes down to that whole evaluation of who needs these things. Will it actually make a difference? Will it give us the return on investment? You know, and Jim's comment earlier about some of these things, they say 70% of the people found that their work was more productive. Well, that tells you immediately that 30% of those people shouldn't have gotten it to begin with. Right. And so companies are going to need to come through and say, what is the advantage of this, whether it's Microsoft 365 or a Dynamics Copilot or a Fabric one or any of the Copilots out there? If they have a cost associated with them, does it make sense for this person to have that? Will they be able to recognize a significant enough benefit that rolling this thing out to them, training them on it, having it become part of our standard within the company, having our IT people be able to support it and going forward and relying on it and becoming dependent on it, does it give us the return for the investment that we're doing? It's not brain science. You know, we can figure this out. We can figure it out and know which ones we're supposed to do. But companies are going to have to sit down and evaluate all of it.
Okay, great. Anybody have any final co-pilot words before we go to the next set of questions? These are my questions, so I want to get to them.
I have one more thing.
Okay.
It's interesting. You know, we had some positive and negative points there, but I don't work for Microsoft, so I'm not plugging this whole thing. But one question I think orgs need to ask right now is, with all the momentum coming on for Copilot and AI in general, is it almost too late to decide not to adopt because your competition is now adopting these tools? And just to keep up, it may be a necessity at least in the short term. Maybe these don't work in a few years, and then we've all learned a lesson. But I think it's just something that has to be explored, evaluated, investigated. It can't be ignored, the adoption of co-pilots or AI in general. It's just a thought.
Okay. No, that's a good closing point for sure. Thanks, Rob. All right, we're now moving to the question sections. So first, if you are in the audience and you have a question for any of the panelists, it's a great time to think about it and put it in the panel, the question panel in GoToMeeting. While you're doing that, I want to get a few of my own questions in. So some of these are questions we get from our members, and I get from my readers on the blog and our podcast listeners, and some are just things I keep wondering about myself. So first, I would like to talk about GA, general availability, and whether it actually means anything anymore. I feel like lately, Microsoft is so set on being a, quote, fast mover that it's releasing anything and everything as GA. Look at Microsoft Copilot for Microsoft 365. They said it was generally available on November 1st, but it was generally available to a very small subset of customers with lots of hoops to jump through. So I want to start with Andy on this one. Andy, what do you think? Does GA mean anything anymore at all?
I think it does, but it doesn't mean what it used to mean. And I think you need to be careful with a lot of the announcements, because Microsoft will say something is available. That's not the same as generally available. Okay, so they're using the term available to mean private preview, public preview, and general availability. It just means people can use it. And those are not the same thing at all. Okay. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing is, like, for on-premises stuff, SQL Server, which I cover, 2022 came out a year ago. Generally available, right? October of 2022. But it wasn't fully available. There was still a list of things that were not generally available, which was really weird for an on-premises product. Usually we're used to having a defined list and we can say this is available or generally available and it's supported. But things like connecting to Azure AD didn't reach general availability until spring, and that came in a cumulative update. The HA failover to Azure still kind of maybe this month is generally available, but that's a year late. And so the idea is, you know, when you go to the cloud, it's even worse, right? Because you have a service that comes out, Fabric, generally available as of yesterday. Does that mean everything that's in the list there that they had and said was going to come in this thing is available? No. It means about 80% of it is, and the rest of the stuff is going to drivel out over time. And I think from my perspective, and let the other analysts jump in, is I think general availability comes down to looking at a particular feature. And is the feature that I need, this big thing that's within the service or the product, is that generally available? Because that's the point when I can use it and it can be supported by Microsoft for production use. And for a lot of companies, you're not allowed to put stuff into production until it's supported by Microsoft. It has to be generally available. And so, you know, I would be really careful. If a feature is not GA, they could still pull it. They're not going to support it, and it would be dangerous to use that. So use Fabric, but don't use the non-GA stuff, you know? That's my view.
Okay. I want to go to the next question. E7, we get asked this all the time. And I was looking at last year's roadmap slide deck, and we asked the same question. Is E7 waiting in the wings, or is it still a way away? Wes, I know, has many thoughts on this question.
Ironically, I think I've come full circle and I'm on the same page as you that it's still quite a ways away, due primarily to E5 lack of adoption. And, you know, this is part of the conundrum, too, that as Microsoft pushes Copilot and other things that are beyond even E5, remember, it's not in E5. There's a lot of people who aren't using Microsoft 365 E5 yet. There's still a lot of customers who are still just licensing Office 365 because it's available. And it's more affordable. So, yeah, you know, I think E7 is coming, but yeah, it's still a year away, maybe more at this point. It's ironically, the closer it gets, the farther away it feels. but it's just that things are so far away in terms of adoption of E5. And even like the Intune suite, they dropped two new features today that are, you can buy a la carte or they're in the Intune suite. And I just feel like the Intune Suite's probably one of those things that'll be in the next tier that becomes available, and adoption of that seems really, really low. Most customers still seem quite happy with what's in stock Intune Plan 1.
Okay. Yeah, you're bringing up what we call here at Directions, batteries not included. These are mostly add-ons where you think, you know, I'm licensing E5, I must get everything, right? And then you find out you have to buy all these extra add-ons. So my question for the panel is there any way that this is a good thing? And I'm thinking when I say that, you know, Microsoft had this whole campaign this year, help customers do more with less. So it could be less expensive to just license one add-on rather than going to an E7 or an E5. Or is this just Microsoft doing a typical Microsoft money grab? Barry, thoughts?
why, yes. I would say there are some puzzling things that Microsoft is doing in this space. One is for example, Privo, which is their privacy management service. You would think that would be part of Purview and Microsoft 365 Purview. It's not. It's an extra, you know, batteries not included service. So it's always been sort of the poster child for, well, if there's going to be an E7, maybe that would be, you know, spread out to encompass Purview and maybe some other Previa and maybe some other thing. We haven't heard anything yet, so we'll see. You know, is it a way to do more with less? I think it's actually a way to do more with and give Microsoft more money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And finally, another topic we get asked about a lot, what are the signs when it's time to move off a Microsoft product or a service? We've done podcasts on this. We've done blog posts on this. People can't get enough of this question. You know, people say, is it safe for me to still be running Windows Server or SharePoint Server or even Skype for Business Server, right? Or is it time for me to finally just get real and go to the cloud and cut the cord? Jim, what do you say when people ask you that? You knew I was going to call on you for that.
Well, you mentioned Skype for Business Server because we've been going back and forth on that one. I think it's a combination of things. You know, Windows Server is still going strong. There's no reason to move off of that. Although, I mean, they're still pushing you towards on-premises products, but they haven't obviated the need for Windows Server on-premises. Whereas like Skype for Business Server, for example, they've really obviated the need for that. Unless you are a completely, totally air-gapped, locked on-premises customer, Teams does what Skype for Business Server did 99% of it. So why do you still have Skype for Business Server? Because some really, really long, really, really large contracts still have significant investments in their integrated phone systems with Skype for Business Server and are holding Microsoft's toes to the fire because Microsoft would definitely like to kill it. So your signs are going to be, of course, the weird pushback of next versions, of seeing any kind of substantive updates slow, but also of seeing another service, particularly a hosted one, that replaces almost all of what it does. I mean, that's what happened with Skype for Business Server with Teams. You're seeing this with Exchange right now, Exchange Server versus Exchange Online. And I think that the Exchange thing also gives another point where Exchange is becoming an embarrassment because there's so many security vulnerabilities for it, and people want to blame Microsoft, but it also means that there has to be a lot of effort taken to maintain Exchange Server on-premises and avoid these security vulnerabilities. It looks bad to Microsoft to say, oh, another company got hacked because of Exchange Server, but then Microsoft is saying, but you haven't patched, but Microsoft gives you a patch and it breaks your setup anyway. That becomes an embarrassment for Microsoft. And that's another thing that like Microsoft is going to say, well, we'd rather not have those embarrassments, move to Exchange Online and stop doing the server thing. Hmm. So, I mean, there's some of the signs. It's seeing, is there something else they really want you to go to, particularly a subscription? And is the update cadence really slowing and becoming unreasonable or irregular?
Got it. All right. Well, thank you, panelists here. Now we're going to get ready for our audience questions. And in the interim, we've got some great resources that I'm going to hand it back to Lauren to talk about for us.
Thank you, Mary Jo. So yeah, those are resources that should inform you all more about what we discussed today. And Let's also talk about the directions on Microsoft membership, if you're not aware of it. It's going to help you spot dead-end technologies, understand your options, and keep up with the latest changes. This resource will answer your questions with up-to-date Microsoft roadmaps, licensing information, webinars, decision kits, and more. And if you want to gain access, you can email us at sales@directionsonmicrosoft.com. And with that, I want to talk about our next webinar. We hope you can join us. It's going to be held Thursday, January 18th at 10 a.m. Pacific. We're going to be discussing Azure Database Decision Guidance. It's being presented by Andrew Snodgrass. And what about our boot camps? These are our world famous Microsoft licensing boot camps. They're the best way to ensure your IT roadmap decisions are cost effective while complying with Microsoft's licensing rules. So if you have an EA renewal coming up in the next 12 months, you should without a doubt be attending one of these trainings. We guarantee that you're going to learn at least one thing that's going to pay for this course many times over. And many organizations find it helpful to send a team due to the breadth and depth of these trainings. So you can learn more on our website or feel free to contact us directly at sales@directionsonmicrosoft.com. And you should also be aware of our advisory services. We will help you level the playing field with Microsoft with our behind the scenes EA negotiation support, or help you verify your licensing position with accuracy with our self-audit service. It's everything from strategy assessments to ongoing expert desk support. Our industry veterans are here to help. So if you want to learn more about our advisory services and how they could benefit your organization, please email us at sales@directionsonmicrosoft.com. And with that, let's move on to questions. So feel free to enter them in the question panel if you haven't already. And just a reminder that members can download this presentation at www.directionsonmicrosoft.com/members/webinars-slides. And if the analysts are ready, I will begin. First question I see here is, how will Microsoft demark the AI it chooses to embed in the M365 suite versus how it will market the supercharged Copilot?
Supercharged Copilot? Are we talking about Microsoft 365?
What's in the M365 suite versus?
Yeah, yeah. There's also there's a thing that's kind of a Copilot called Microsoft 365 Chat, which is like this Uber service that pulls together information from all the other individual Copilots in Microsoft 365, and that basically compiles it together and makes it look more cohesive. So you get information from Teams and Outlook and other places that both combines organization data and other pieces of data. I don't know if we're talking about that. Any of the analysts on the panel want to take a stab?
I think one of the most important things to bear in mind is when I think of the supercharged Copilot for Microsoft 365, I'm thinking about Microsoft 365 Copilot. And this gets back to what I said during my section, where the most important thing to remember is that while Microsoft 365 suites may include some Copilot technologies, for example, what was Bing Chat, now Bing Copilot for Bing or Copilot in Bing, depending on which marketing you read, and then some of the Power Platform technologies that Josh writes about, some of those base models, there may be a little piece of it included in the Microsoft 365. The main thing to remember is that while they're promoting Copilot as being part of Microsoft 365, as of this moment, the one you really care about, Microsoft 365 Copilot, that is a battery that's not included. You're going to have to buy it for everybody, starting at $300 or more. You're going to have to buy it separately for everybody because it's not a part of the E5 or E3 suites.
Yeah, and when I heard Super Copilot, that is something we've talked about too. Like, should there be a one Copilot that orchestrates the others? And we haven't seen that really yet as a offering. But this is a good chance to plug something my colleague Andy here is working on, which is a chart that enumerates through all the Copilots that have been announced and points out their differences and their licensing rules. And that's coming soon, right, Andy? That's going to be published?
That's coming out on Monday morning.
Okay. So that's a great reference for members to take a look at. What are all the Copilots? What do they do? How much do they cost? Which ones do I need?
Yeah, actually, and all of us have been working on this chart, this kit, to tell you all about the Copilots. And it's one of those things that we're going to keep up to date on a continual basis as each of the different Copilots, wherever they reside, Dynamics, Fabric, Cosmos, M365 anywhere, we will update the guidance and the chart on this. And so it'd be one of those things, if you're really interested in Copilots, is make sure you get a shortcut created to this particular report so that you can go back to it again.
One thing I would add real quickly about Power Platform Copilots is that even though Power Platform services are kind of included in Microsoft 365 licenses, you are probably not going to be able to use Copilot for those Power Platform services because they all rely on having Dataverse. They go and create apps or flows while building Dataverse databases. So don't look on to have that functionality as kind of the light 365 licenses.
Joshua, that brings me to a question here. So will Power Virtual Agents no longer be considered part of the Power Platform?
They're being kind of cagey about this right now. The new Copilot Studio, they say it's built on Power Virtual Agents and other Power Platform services. As far as they have said right now, you will need Microsoft 365 Copilot to be able to use the rebranded Power Virtual Agents. It won't be a standalone unless they make some change between yesterday's announcements and the future.
And this kind of touches on the first question: where can we get a list of all the Copilots and the priority order that they, that as far as value goes?
See Andy's report when it comes out on Monday. The chart should explain most of the questions you might have.
Yeah, we can tell you what.
As far as ranking, that's going to be also personal value. So,
Eric,
There's a minimum of 300 users to sign up for M365 Copilot. Is that correct?
That is correct. The one thing I would highlight there is that this is also not a plug and play thing with the training and work that has to go on behind the scenes. It's not for small businesses at this point anyway.
One other thing on the Copilot for Microsoft 365, Microsoft is testing an early preview, private preview, that Copilot for smaller customers and consumers. And they have said that that's supposed to be an offering for 2024. I think, Mary Jo, you might know the details on that, but that has been mentioned by Microsoft that it is coming.
It has. That's right. So we don't know exactly when in 2024, but they have said it's coming. We don't have a date.
And do you think they're going to be incentivizing people with discounts?
I can add a little color to that question.
Sure.
So right now, Microsoft is not saying publicly there are volume discounts on Copilot for Microsoft 365, but I've heard of one example where there has been a volume discount already for a very large customer of it. So stay tuned. I bet there will be.
The other thing I would highlight is in the licensing realm, Microsoft will often assist you in scratching a harder to reach part of your back. If you agree to buy some Azure, there might be a discount in Copilot, that sort of thing. That's historically where they'll do it. Then they want to sell one thing, they'll discount something else so they can still make the believed revenue in one spot.
There was a question about Dynamics 365 is maturing nicely. Do you believe it's going to be able to compete with SAP ERP and become a serious option for current SAP customers?
Wow, that's a big question. Can it? Will it? Well, it depends on what your industry is and if you want to go that direction with it. You know, one of the things we see with the ERP side of Dynamics is it's really strong in the supply chain, the whole logistics and warehousing capability. It's really strong on the commerce side. We see that a lot where it's deployed. And most of the time, there are some people who are using it as their full one solution ERP. Most of the time, it's used in conjunction with an SAP. So it kind of depends on how ingrained in SAP you are, and are you really using all the functionality, and is that available in Dynamics Finance? It really depends, you know. The other aspect on it is the HR, human resources component within Dynamics as strong as SAP's? No. There's lots of stuff that's not in Dynamics. They don't have payroll. You got to get that third party, right? So there's a lot of things where you could, but it's really going to depend.
Yeah, I'll just add on to what Andy said, which is that Microsoft itself is an SAP customer. And so you can think of how Microsoft deploys ERP as having a central SAP hub with a lot of dynamic satellites for different business units. And you do see that a lot, actually, where you know very large enterprises use SAP as a kind of central ERP core, you know, with other systems scattered about. I'd say the other thing is one of the questions is how easy is, or you know, is it likely that people can switch? And you know, it's just speaking from experience, switching ERP systems is a very, very difficult thing. Once SAP or Dynamics is in, it tends to be very, very difficult to rip it out and put it in something else.
Yeah, and in case you're wondering if Barry's comment about Microsoft running SAP and having all these satellite Dynamics things are right, if you didn't read his bio on it, he was a CTO at Microsoft, and so he has scars that can actually prove that that is the deployment architecture that they used.
Okay. So with that, I have one other interesting question here. You talk about SharePoint Premium as a replacement for Syntex, and I would like to understand how is SharePoint Premium related, i.e. Copilot for Office will be able to take into account all content available on SharePoint OneDrive through Graph API, or will we need to wait for SharePoint Premium?
Well, SharePoint Premium basically is the rebranding of Syntex. So it pulls in some of the AI capabilities of Syntex, but also other stuff that's really not AI related, like archiving and backup. So that said, Microsoft 365 Copilot will be a separate entity, and content that is generated from SharePoint Premium, any of the features within it, would be part of your internal model when you're using Copilot to extract data internally. It wouldn't necessarily be directly linked because SharePoint Premium itself is not going to be the content store. SharePoint itself will be. SharePoint Premium is just another battery included add-on that you will be paying for. Right now, all the Syntex features are pay as you go. So you might pay, you know, 5 cents per document scanned and translated. SharePoint Premium pricing has not yet been made public. So I don't know whether it will be like AI Builder, where you get a certain amount of credits and then have to keep paying more with add-ons, or if you get something for a flat monthly rate for a tenancy.
Wanted to ask a couple more. Copilot's everywhere. It's included in E3 license, ? I thought it was an add-on. After yesterday, it looks like maybe a scaled-down version is an E3, but you can add on an additional Copilot, so a little confusion.
I can't think of a single Copilot that's actually in E3. So Bing, Copilot for Bing is in there, but that's the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
One other question. Any news on Exchange VNEX on-prem, and will Office 2024 include Outlook Classic?
We're not sure yet about Office 2024. They're definitely working hard on the broken version of new Outlook. I don't know if it's going to be a OneNote situation where you end up being able to get the new one, but also they continue like the 2021 version forward. As for Exchange VNext, I think we'll have to follow up an email because our Exchange person is not on the call today.
Thank you, Joshua. Well, I really appreciate everybody joining us today. It was a great turnout. And again, we hope you can join us for the next webinar, Thursday, January 18th at 10 a.m., Azure Database Decision Guidance, being presented by Andrew Snodgrass. Panel of analysts, thank you so much. Mary Jo, you're awesome. We love you, and have a great evening, everybody.
Thanks for attending, everyone. That was fun.
Thanks, all.
Thank you.